Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the tree of life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
All right, y'all, it's spring, and you know what that means. It's time to start planning our summer festival traveling. Yep, it's time to get into my Airbnb bag cross-country, a.k.a. Time to visit my homes all across the country. And you know what I never think about? Why not list my own spot on Airbnb and host some folks at my house? I mean, my house is cute. Yes, let's make money while we're spending money. Just trying to help you out, man, because your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. What up, y'all? It's Unpaid Bill from Questlove Supreme. We are back with part two of the Questlove Supreme interview with Steve Rifkin. Steve co-founded Loud Records and put out some incredible albums by Wu-Tang, Raekwon, Mobb Deep, and more. If you haven't listened to part one, please check it out. Steve talks about growing up in the music industry, James Brown coming to his bar mitzvah, his relationship with Tupac, and putting out some hip-hop classics. Check it.
I will say that my first listen to that album.
36 Chambers or Cuban Links?
Oh, 36 Chambers. So the day that both Marauders and Enter the Wu-Tang comes out, and we're driving up 95 from Philly listening to this. And, you know, I know it, not since Prince's fan base with the album Dirty Mind have I heard what I deem like revision on an opinion of the record. When I first heard the Wu-Tang record, and not that I was looking from like a commercial standpoint or an underground standpoint, but I just never heard something so dirty in my life. I don't know. I just like, this is way too underground for regular people. And yet it almost became the pinnacle of main. It's weird. It's like they became the epicenter in the mainstream of the system that they were against, which, you know, I wasn't complaining.
Did they
were a rock
dude,
and roll.
Wu-Tang has power.
Oh yeah, they do. But I just mean they still are still Wu. They're not looked at as.
I don't mean like in a four letter word way. Like they're mainstream. They're cursed.
Right.
No, but I'm just saying that there's no way you're going to tell me on that first listen that this group,
I'm with you,
was going to be the alpha and the mega and the epicenter of what.
But let me ask you a question. Sorry for cutting you off.
Yeah.
When you heard Cream and Can It Be for the first time.
Well, yeah.
I remember hearing Cream for the first time in the studio.
It's the singles. Right. The singles.
I knew actually before, because I was on the road. I moved to New York and I opened up the New York office, and I opened up and I took an apartment in New York, and now I was bi-coastal. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, when Cream came on, and forget about the part with Mess on the Hook with Dollar Bill and what that meant to me or whatever.
Right.
But I just knew that this album, there was something fucking special about it. Then 3 months later, my office in LA was on Melrose and Kings Road where Cookies is. Literally, the building where Cookies is. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to the deli to grab a sandwich. And I see this white kid head down to here on a fucking skateboard with the old Wu-Tang Scully singing Wu-Tang Clan Ain't Not to Fuck With. And I knew Gecko. I said, at my age now, I'm 60 years old now. I said, right, that when I'm fucking 60, they're still going to be around.
Yeah.
I don't know. In my mind, it was just like, again, I got to go back to the first Jungle Brothers record. Like, the Jungle Brothers' first album, Straight Out the Jungle, was just like an inside secret for like real heads. Meanwhile, like, mainstream America only feels Hammer, Vanilla Ice, like more, you know, mainstream rappers. And
can I ask you one question, though?
Yes.
Jungle Brothers was on Tommy Boy, correct?
No. That's De La Soul. Jungle Brothers was on Warlock and then went to Warner Brothers for the second album.
Okay.
And I was just like, just to me, you know, once Cream started picking up traction, I was like, wait a minute. This is almost like if Straight Out the Jungle by the Jungle Brothers really got a chance. Now, I mean, there's a lot of factors into the success of Wu-Tang Clan. But what I was basically leading up to was, upon first listen of that entire record, you knew you had lightning in a bottle in your possession?
Yeah, I knew we had lightning when Outkast was throwing a party. When did their album came out? The summer of 93.
94.
I know. I was at a party, an album release party. I was with Steve Stout.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the Emmy, I think Clark Kent was DJing. Mm-hmm. And the Emmy THOD record came on. And we're talking, and all of a sudden, everybody just went straight to the dance floor.
Mm-hmm.
And losing their fucking mind. And that's when I knew that there was, it was like my first, like I needed to see it with my own eyes, right? And that's why I like to be outside. So it was like, at the end of the day, like when I see something with my eyes, and that's what made me move to New York and open up shop in New York. And then you remember the New Music Seminar?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right, then I said, Clark, let's find the club. It was area. And they let me do a showcase with the Licks, Twister, and all of New York showed up.
Shout out to G2, Wu-Tang's trusty, one of their many street team people that I've associated Wu with. G used to be part of the Princeton hip hop circle that, you know.
Princeton.
Yeah, but, you know, he would also work the Philadelphia market. Like, RZA would have, like, his side guys also. Or I don't know if G was part of Rifkin's street promotion team or RZA's personal people, but that's how I got hip to them. All right, so I have to ask you the other side of the coin, too, because a big part of my personal success was also being the guy on standby whenever somebody would mess up, i.e., blah, blah, blah is not going to make it to the show. Can you guys get here in 12 hours? Just dropped out. Yo, can you guys fly in next week? And literally, at the beginning of Wu-Tang Forever, I swear to God, at least 60% of my entire output of doing shows were based on Wu-Tang shows not attended. During the period of 97.
You talk about the Wu-Tang Rage Against the Machine tour? Or?
Starting then, but just basically, you know, like the Roots might as well have been, you know, the 12th member of the Wu-Tang Clan, because literally he's like, Wu's supposed to come, or whatever designated Wu member was supposed to show up, and whoosh, okay, we'll get the Roots instead. So for me, though, in 1997, and I have my theories about this, what are your feelings on Wu-Tang Forever?
It was a double album.
Right.
You know,
but did you get goosebumps?
on certain songs.
All right.
The album, I mean, it was a double album. So, like I said, I never considered myself an A&R. I got goosebumps on Triumph. I got goosebumps. I've got the name of the kid. It's Yours, and there was one, and there was one more record which I would have, where I really got goosebumps. But at the end of the day, I put that tour together between Wu-Tang and Rage.
Right,
right, and you know we it was the first $1 million hip hop video. Brett Ratner directed it.
Yeah. Look, no, nothing gets played. I don't, from my perspective, okay, so first of all, I feel like the strength of Triumph was that it was the first offering. I mean, you know, it could have been, like, name any other song from that. It could have been Dog Shit, the song, not actual dog shit. I mean, it could have been Reunited. It could have been whatever the first song from that album was going to come forth was going to be instant.
Reunited was the song that gave me goosebumps. It's Yours, Triumph, and
Reunited. Right. Why didn't Reunited? To me, the opening Reunited.
I mean Riz's verse, you know, was ridiculous in that. I mean, because they started fighting. So let me just tell you where I am, right?
Right.
Biggie passes a few months before that, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Me and Puff had conversations before Big passed. Who's going to come first? Who or Biggie? And we were both coming with a double album. So Big was always going to come first.
Right.
Because I didn't really, we weren't having radio records, right? So we have Brett do the video. And like you said, whatever the video was, the video was. But to me, they were a rock and roll group, or they were a group, right? So the Rage Tour was, right? We sold 8 million records on that album. If they finished that tour, right? Because we started in Florida and we were coming up to New York. So that was already home base. Like, and sales were going up. Now we were going to do the bumfuck, you know, like the mid Indiana,
right.
Like the mid Midwest and West Coast. That album would have sold 20 million records. And that was always my plan. If we ended
it up. It should have went diamond. I agree with you. It should have went diamond. I you know, I don't know the exact conditions. I don't, you know, I know it was a fire. I always felt like, whenever someone gets a good formula and they change it, I wish they didn't make that record in California. I wish they would have stayed.
Well, the problem was, if you saw the show, Riz's house got flooded. Everything was destroyed.
Right.
So he had to start from scratch anyway. And with everybody having solo records, I understand what you're saying.
Right.
But with everybody having solo records, in New York, you're being pulled 10 different ways. Everybody's being pulled 10 different ways. They all went platinum. Jizz went platinum. Ghost went platinum. Meth went platinum. Ray went platinum. So it's like they're getting, so them being in one house together and to create that unity, how they had it on the first album, granted, it wasn't Shaolin and it wasn't in a basement.
Right.
Right. But the house got flooded and everything was destroyed.
Can I ask though, I kind of feel like the end of that reign, kind of not the end of that reign, but at least the stronghold of that initial period was the Hot 97 situation.
That was a bad situation. I was on my
bachelor. Could you have rectified that situation, or like, how do you, in terms of, are you the type of CEO that has to talk to the artist to stop them from sabotaging their progress or whatever? Or could you explain the story of that whole Hot 97 situation and then like Hot 97 not playing Wu-Tang anymore? And
I was on a plane. It was my bachelor party.
Okay.
I was flying from Dallas to Atlanta and, you know, we land and, my phone's blowing the fuck up. But, you know, I have all pretty much my senior executives with me. Right. You know, because my brother was a partner. My best friend, my childhood best friend, Rich, you know, was a partner. Mojo, who's, you know, became a brother and running promotion. They were all with me. And I'm getting, you know, this is when everybody had not even the two-way, just a page still. And, like, what the fuck's happening? And I couldn't get Riz on the phone. And then Tracy, who was the program director for the Hot 97,
yes,
just called me. I'm getting married in 4 fucking days. Like, called me and just says, go fuck yourself. Like, you know, just like, I mean, if she was a dude, we would have went to Fist, right?
But and, she didn't know that you'd personally, like.
She was venting.
Right.
Like, I don't even think, she was so mad, I don't even think she went to the wedding. And she was invited to the wedding. Don't forget, Wu-Tang was the first rap record that Hot 97 fucking played. They were a dance station.
Hot 97 was also on that No Rap Work Day.
Right?
Yeah.
More music, less rap. They were on that?
Shit. No, they weren't a rap. I mean, no, Hot 97 was a dance station. Like,
right. Okay.
And then Flex was, I mean, between Flex and Angie, they're the ones that took it to a whole different place where Flex had a show on the weekends, you know, and then thank God, you know, and then thank God, you know, Puff came with Flavor in Your Ear. And there was some, you know, and then finally, you know.
Right.
It was and he was making those records. Like, so thank God for him. Because, you know.
So there was, it was absolutely unrepairable. I guess for our listeners that are hearing, you know, they're doing Summer Jam, and I don't know if it was Ghostface or I forgot who said something out of line. Fuck Hot 97. They don't play our shit.
You know, listen, let's keep it 100. There were 75,000 fucking people there.
Right.
Right. They're making a fortune. So we were on tour with Rage, right? And at the end of it, we weren't getting paid a lot of money yet.
Right.
Yeah. This
was really a Rage tour, and Ghost, you know, should he have said it? No, but
I'm about to say that don't help with your argument though, Steve, with Tracy Netto. It's still like
just to be clear, artists do not get paid for doing summer shows.
No, now they get, you know, they started getting paid a few years ago. Not a few years
Hell
ago.
Yeah.
A few years after that. They were getting paid big dollars.
I see. I see.
Imagine Nicki Minaj not getting paid these. What? Yeah, for Hot 97.
Okay. Well, no, I mean, but just black artists in general, just, you know, you just.
Those radio
are
promo
so
shows. Adept
to black radio that you, yeah, I'll do it for free, you know, as long as you keep playing my records. But so there was literally absolutely no.
She, for a
no
while.
No mea culpa,
she,
no.
So for a while, they even banned all loud records.
What? Yeah, this is a thing, Pete, but this is what was happening too, right, Steve?
Well,
at the time when an artist would do something wrong. That's what
I mean, me and Tracy were friends. Who else is she gonna take it out of?
Right. But you know, Amir, this happened in Philly with Beans. Like it happened with Foxy Brown with Def Jam when she cussed out Kobe and they said we ain't playing these records for a minute. Like that it feels like an error.
I did not know that. Okay.
Yeah.
So with actually, you mentioned Puff. I was going to ask with the opening sketch of side three or side two of the purple tape of Raekwon when they kind of, you know, draw a line in the sand with Bad Boy and Wu-Tang, i.e. the, I guess by that point in 95, Bad Boy was establishing himself as more of a mainstream middle of the aisle.
Look, we got to give credit where credit is due. I mean, Puff had everybody. I mean, he had the world in the palm of his hands. He was coming with hit after hit. And you know what Ray Ghost said. You know, me and Puff spoke. He goes, "What was that about?" I said, "I don't know. I have no idea." But I go, "Let's just keep it. We're in two totally different lanes. We're not even in the same freeway, like." You know, I'm just using New York. Like, you know, we're on the Northern State, they're on the LIA, you know, and it's just like, I'm not trying to compete with Puff. It's
Thank
two
God.
Different things. He's making radio records. We're still making records for the street. And I'm not like, I'm trying to help Puff get as much as he possibly can. Like, so, and you know, and they worked it out a few months later. So
I mean, always wanted to know what the response was because, you know,
Yeah, no. When Suge said "fuck New York" or whatever the hell he said at the Source Awards,
right?
That's when they all reunited again, right? And that was like 2 weeks after we came out with the album.
Wow.
So were you there for Hip Hop's funeral? I was there.
No, I wasn't there because my son was just born, so I pretty much was taking that summer off.
Not there.
Hey, Steve, right. can I ask a question real quick about these records? Since you have such not made for radio records, but yet and still, it seems like you got to a stride where y'all were picking like amazing singles.
I had the best A&R staff to this day. They weren't.
And who was that person? Okay.
No, there was a team. It was a guy named Matt. It was a guy named Matty C who actually discovered Biggie. He worked at
Matty
the Source.
C. Yes.
Right. It was a guy
Matty
named
C Scott. Of the Source.
I remember the name. Yes.
Right. Scott Free started off as my assistant, and he got himself into A&R quickly. Stretch Armstrong, who had the Stretch and Bobbito show.
Stretch was doing A&R.
Yeah. And then
Stretch was picking radio hits.
He was the first one. And then a guy by the name of Sean C. came.
Yes.
Sean C, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Speaking of Matty C, Mobb Deep, I remember getting Shook One's Part One. How in the world did you guys manage to, on the second go round, again, capture lightning in the bottle? Like
the street team. So I was saying the streets don't lie. The record was cool. It did what it was supposed to do, but it wasn't a fucking smash. And we came in there, you know, and I said, Matty, what are we going to do? You know, we're cool, but this is not going to drive anything home. And he goes, matter of fact, Havoc just did a remix last night. Here it is.
And you heard it.
And we heard it. And I was on my way to How Can I Be Down. And I had a Walkman, not even a Discman. I had a Walkman. Mm-hmm. And I was in a car with Stretching Bobbito. And I was on me and Bobbito, I used to play basketball. And there was like some type of celebrity game. Mm-hmm. And they lost their mind. And, you know, they were the first one to play it. They played it. We gave it to Flex. This is September, October. And then when we came back after Christmas, it was the biggest record in New York.
So, but I'm saying in your mind, it wasn't like, oh, well, that didn't make it. All right, what else you guys got? Like,
no.
I think another A&R or CEO would have just been like, oh, well, that's Stillborn, so... What else is down the pike? But it's just unheard of to resuscitate a song like that.
Well, when they came to the office, I knew they were the perfect, like, who is your first child? And I got my first check and my first plaque and everything else like that. But, you know, when you give a jab, you got to come with a cross or a hook right away, right? So who definitely shook people and got everybody's attention. But when we came with Mob, that's when everybody knew that Lad was for real. And don't forget, I still had the marketing company. So the bigger Lad got, the bigger the marketing company got. The bigger the marketing company, the more people wanted to be at Lad. And we were like three for three. You know, well, Madcap, we made a little bit of money, but it just did a little over 100. But, you know, mm-hmm. The licks didn't go gold, but the licks did 300,000. Wu did 2 million mm-hmm. on the first record. And, you know, and Mob did, you know, they went platinum on the first album.
So even with you knowing, like, cause me, you know, I knew of, and I had the Fourth and Broadway mm-hmm. Mob Deep.
Hit from the back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hit it from the back and all that stuff. Like, but in your mind, you were like, yeah, these guys are going to still be a thing.
Yeah. I mean, they came to the office. I don't know if they were going to smoke a cigarette or if they were going to smoke a blunt, but they went to the bathroom. And this is in, like, you know, a corporate building.
Right.
And they lit. Prodigy wasn't there because he was sick. At the time, mm-hmm. it was Havoc and, you know, some of the guys.
12 guys, right.
And the sprinklers just went off. I said, they're a perfect follow-up to Wu-Tang. And that's how I looked at it.
The sign.
So for heaven. You, there still had to be an edge or a rock or an element of your groups, that authenticity.
Yeah.
To make 100%. It. Okay. I see.
And do you mind telling us like a Prodigy story? Just because, you know, we were one of the last shows that he did before we lost him.
He was like he was a brother to me. I mean, just like he had such a good soul. Yeah. And, mm-hmm. you know, he just wanted to learn, and he was like a sponge. I think his oldest son or daughter is my oldest son. I think they're like 4 or 5 months apart. And he would say, is your son coming to the office? I'm like, I don't know why. He goes, I need to come up, and I got my kid with me. And, you know, if he was coming up, that means he must have been going over some artwork or whatever he was going through. Mm-hmm. So we were fortunate enough, you know, to have a nanny. So I'm like, I'll make sure you see it. What time you're going to be here? So I just had to get approval from my wife, and, you know, and the nanny would watch, you know, both babies, you know, and he was appreciative. Like, and, you know, we could have arguments, and say fuck you to each other. But at the end of the day, we would both say, you know, I love you. And, you know, and it wasn't like we were just fighting for what we felt. And it was never about money. It was always about maybe a single or a tour or something like that. It was not like we already spent this and we're not going. It was about passion and really what was going to get to the next level.
After the Jay-Z incident in 2001, did you, like, how does a label CEO respond to that? To reuse, like, no sweat off your back, just get the next record ready. Actually, wait, can you explain the situation to me? I was in
LA for the summer.
Right.
I remember getting the call, and I wanted to call Bane. I'm like, where the fuck did you get that picture? Like, how did you get the picture? Right? So,
Ashanti.
What?
Oh, we're going to get,
you know more shit
Prodigy
than I.
Prodigy didn't even tell us
that. We're going to get Ashanti on the show. I got the tea on that joint. Yeah.
All right. So, Ashanti. So at the end of the day, it's like, man, like, let's just get to work. And not even about dissing Jay or whatever. It's like, what's it saying? Sticks and stones may break your bones, but names will never harm you. So, I mean, yeah, we got one on the chin, but you know what? We're still standing, and it's not how many times you fall, it's how many times you get up.
Yo, what's up? This is Fonsigolo from Team Supreme. Black representation in media is very important to me. I think it's important to have our stories told by people who look like us and who have shared in our common experiences. Some of my earliest influences were Donnie Simpson. I would also say Tom Joyner, Angela Stribling, Sherry Carter. They were just people who told our stories with a lot of class and dignity and were big inspirations to me. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcast, The Center Black Voices. It's NPR Noir. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. 'Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? No, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at Airbnb.com/host.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Why did you decide to sell the label in 99?
Because I wanted, when us selling to Sony, we were going to be the third major in the Sony system, right? Okay. It was Columbia, Epic, and now it's going to be us. And it really wasn't about the money. It was more about my ego, which, you know, was fucked up. I was like, all right, we're going to be the third major. And I'm going to be able to have this, be on the same playing field as Jimmy, as everybody else. Because I always felt we weren't on the same playing field. And it ended up being the biggest mistake of my life.
So you left in 99. So like the whole Project Pat period and
that all came 3-6 Mafia. Like we broke 3-6 Mafia. We broke Project Pat. We broke Flip, Pun Pass during that time. We had Murder Music. Divino was before. Divino was like 95, 96. Mm-hmm. But 98, right around the fun time. So that, you know, and it was just, I never played a corporate game before. You know, we went from a staff of 30 people to the coolest, most creative company out there on both aspects, on the marketing side of things and then on the record side of things. You know, we did the deal, and next thing you know, I have a staff of 300 people. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, there was this woman, God bless her soul. Her name was Tova Hoffman. You know, she was in her 60s calling me Mr. Rifkin. I'm 35 years old, 36 years old. I'm like, please don't call me Mr. Rifkin, you know. And she was just, and I knew then, it was like, how much time do we have left in this fucking deal? And it was just like, I was stuck for 3 years. I started having panic attacks, anxiety attacks. I was like, I just couldn't wait to get the fuck out. And it was the first time ever, like, I didn't know which way to look because I thought that I was getting hit every which way I got from corporate.
Now, there's another Philadelphia connection that you kind of have. My good friend, Charles Stone III, who directed many a Roots video, made his debut with a street classic called Paid in Full, which is, I believe, one of your first loud film. Could you talk about the process of getting into the movies?
Again, I didn't want to be in it. We were doing all of Miramax's marketing through the marketing company. Now, you know, we're branching out. Now I have every film studio, MGM, Miramax, Warner Brothers, plus the records, and the street team marketing went to corporate America, and I sold 25% of the company to a company called Interpublic at that time, which was the largest advertising holding company in the world.
Okay.
So Miramax wants, there was a guy by the name of Scott Lambert, who was an agent of William Morris, who was just a really good friend of a really good friend of mine. And he says, Miramax wants to do urban films. Like, I can get you a 3-picture deal. And I'm like, huh? You know, he's like, he was a brother to me. I'm like, Scott, that's not going to happen. Why would they give me a 3-picture deal? So he sets up a meeting. I don't want to say hard. I think it was Bob Weinstein, but okay. I couldn't stand Bob. I already had a fight with him once, and I beat the shit out of him.
He meant this. Oh,
yeah.
I was Steve.
Yeah.
All right, we should ask those questions too. Like,
He was just a fucking prick. I mean, when the big earthquake in LA happened, my office was destroyed. I had to send a report in because I don't give a fuck who died, who this, who that. And I said this. I said, the next time I see you, I promise you, I'm gonna smack the shit out of you. And I hung up the phone. A year and a half later, my son is 4 weeks old. He was born June 10th, July 4th weekend, 1995. I'm pulling off. I took a house in the Hamptons, and there's a gas station. I go to take a piss, and there he is. He has no idea who the fuck I am.
And
hey, keep going, Steve.
I smacked him in the face. I said, Bobby, get that.
And that is our promo, ladies and gentlemen. Steve Rifkin will be on Questlove Supreme, smacking motherfuckers up.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Back down. Not just any kind. In the Hamptons. Right?
So, could
have got locked up for that.
Now I got it. So now we're doing a presentation for Divina. You mentioned Divina.
Oh, yes, please talk, please talk.
So we're coming, and my brother says Miramax is coming with an offer. By the time we land, it was Dimension, which was the sister label to Miramax.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the indie side. Right. I said, Jonathan, you're full of shit. We land, we get to the hotel, there's a fucking contract. I don't know if my brother forged my fucking signature. I don't even remember signing the deal. And next thing you know, I have a 3-picture. This all happened within a week, a 3-picture deal. And they threw crazy fucking money at us. And then Brett Ratner says, Dame has an incredible story. Like, but I go, who's going to produce it? I don't know nothing about, I don't even know how to produce a record. Like, I'm going to now produce a fucking movie. He goes, no, you got to hire this guy, Ron. We hired this guy, Ron. And the rest is history. and they, you know, I'm not going to, the only thing that I did is we had the deal, but this was, I got to give credit to Dame. Dame did everything. He picked Charles. Yeah. He did everything. I'm not trying to take his thunder. I mean, he did everything, and we, you know, I just went for the ride. When he asked me to take my name off as executive producer, I was taking my name off anyway, because it was based on a true story, and I didn't want any fucking headaches, people just coming out of the woodwork.
Right, coming at you. Right.
Yeah, so I was taking my name off anyway. I was like, that's not a problem.
We now live in a time in which the African Renaissance has truly arrived with, like, African music and African artists getting mainstream success. But, you know, I know that you, I mean, I won't say a risk, but you were actually ahead of the game. And I believe you signed Akon. Did you not?
Yeah.
What was it about Akon? And you signed him early, like back in 2004, 2005, I believe.
He was right when I left GLAAD, I started SRC Records.
Right.
Right. So I signed Banner. I'm a basketball guy.
David Banner and Akon.
Yeah. I'm a basketball guy. And I break my nose playing basketball.
Okay.
And the macho guy that I am, like, all I really want to do is cry, but my son is watching. He must be 8 or 9 years old. And I want to show him, like, I have blood all over me, and I want to show him that it's okay to, like, get hit and you don't have to cry. Meanwhile, I'm seeing three of everything. It's like, you know, if the basket's over there, I shut the ball over there.
Right.
And, like, then I literally just, I never felt pain, like, and I just passed out. And when they were taking me to the hospital, Kenny Burns was with me. Kenny, he goes, you got to hear this. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? And there was only one record that I wanted to hear. And not, I mean, there's only one record that I said, just keep on playing it over and over and over again. And my philosophy was, like, I never considered myself an A&R guy. Like, it was always about the team.
Wait, right. So, you said Kenny Burns said that?
No, I said Kenny had the tape.
Right.
And he played it for me. We were playing ball. And now we're going to the hospital to get my nose fixed.
Okay. I'm just tripping that Kenny Burns is a part of the Akon story. This is amazing. Okay.
So in those days I flew private. And I just didn't know if I was be allowed to fly. I didn't know what the hell was the matter with my nose. It could have been like a full, you know, brain aneurysm. I didn't know what the fuck I had. You know, they said they broke my nose and I couldn't really fly for 24 hours for infection. So I just said, we're going to Atlanta instead of New York. And I met Divine, I met Akon. The rest was history. And I pretty much did the same thing. Universal laughed in my face. I said, this is going to be the biggest artist of my career. And they said, oh, this is going to be bigger than War. I'm like, yeah. And they laughed and I got so fucking mad. I was like, you know what? Fuck you guys. And I had, there was somebody that was with me at LAD who started off as an intern and a street team guy. And then he just grew and grew and grew with me. And then when I started SRC, I gave him a piece of the company and he was my president, a guy by the name of Gabby Acevedo. And his wife was pregnant at the time. And I said, Gab, you do the East and the South, I'll do the West and the Midwest. And we didn't have a video, we didn't have anything. He took Akon and I took Akon's brother Boo. And we may believe Boo was Akon. And we
What?
Wait. Yeah.
Wow. Oh, this is like the Little Richard James Brown situation. We're both Little Richard and James Brown. We're touring as Little Richard.
I didn't. Okay.
Oh, it happens.
So we had no video. Nobody knew what Akon looked like. And,
okay.
And at the end of the day, the record broke in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Salt Lake City, which is like. You know, I fly into New York with a record called Locked Up with Styles.
I was just about to say, was it locked up? Okay.
Right. And I come to New York, and this is, you know, Republic was known for doing their research. I shit you not, there's a fucking report like this. Must have been 50 pages on every store in Albuquerque and Utah. You wouldn't believe how many fucking stores there were, you know, between Target to Walmart. And the shit's going through the roof, sales-wise. And we're like, what the fuck is going on? You know, and I'm like, I'm trying to bring it east. And, you know, and now, you know, and we had to change our philosophy because Republic was a radio company. They didn't understand street records. So I had to cover like Philly came in, Boston came in, Connecticut came in, Miami came in, you know, New York was the last one to come in, you know, and then it was Mother's Day. And I get a phone call from somebody who goes, what the fuck did you do in Brooklyn? I'm like, what are you talking about? Because I'm talking about Akon, you know, and the truth is I really didn't do anything. We surrounded New York where it would just have to leak in. And with the Kings Plaza Mall, you know, the record was being played in every fucking car. You know, that Monday, Ebro calls me up and he says, we're adding the record, you know. And then 2 weeks later, like, the research was like number one requested and like top three call out. I mean, the record broke. And it was the first week, I think we scanned 3,000 records. It was the lowest sound scanning record I ever had in my life.
Mm-hmm.
First week. But each week, it didn't go 3,000 to 1,500. So they stayed at 3,000, 3,200, 3,100. And when that fucking thing just took off, I mean, by the fall, we were at 60,000 a week.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't even come with Lonely yet.
I was so tired of that record. Good God, okay. They played the shit out of that record.
I have a confession about Locked Up. And this is before the era of Shazam, where you can't find out who the artist is. I swear to God, for a good 21 seconds, I said, holy shit. Roberta Fleck, comeback of the century.
I'm gone.
Yo.
But Locked Up with Styles P was also a remix.
I didn't hear his verse, but Akon's voice was so, I can't describe it. It's
such a compliment to Akon. Such a compliment. Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's androgynous, but I literally thought it was a woman singing. And because it was done in such a rich alto, and I never heard this voice before, for 20 seconds, I was like, wait.
A rich alto.
It could happen. I was like, if Lauryn Hill and Aretha Franklin are working together, I was like, yo, let me find out that Roberta Flack is about to come back like a motherfucker.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? No, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at Airbnb.com/host.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern-day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, wait. Before I let you go, there's one question I always ask of every label CEO. Can you tell me three acts that you almost signed that were close but no cigars?
Jay-Z.
You could have signed Jay-Z.
BMV actually hated me so much, and because we took them for so much money, they didn't want to give us any more money to sign Jay. But I go back with Dane since he's 15, 16 years old when he was managing Original Flavor.
Wow. Wow.
So
that's dope.
So wow. Jay, he wasn't an act, but he was, to me, one of the best executives. You know, Irv Gotti. When he had Mike Geronimo, we tried to get the record.
Shit.
Irv will tell you this. We, whatever reason, we couldn't get the sample cleared, and then BMG was saying, you're wasting your time. And this was literally, I just signed Mobb Deep. They said, you're wasting your time, and we're not going to give you the money to do it. Find something else. So if I did the deal with Mike, I'm sure Irv would have ended up being with me.
Are you talking about Master IC or the that whatever second Master, single what, that he had that was more Puffy-ish?
No, the first single. The first
thing. Master IC, that's a goddamn masterpiece.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Jay-Z,
And then M.
And then Eminem.
You had a chance to sign him.
Yeah, but the thing was this. If he stayed with us, and I had dinner with Paul Rosenberg a few weeks ago, he wouldn't have been Eminem 400 million records later.
Right.
He would have been Eminem 50 million records. He was an underground rapper.
Yeah,
you know, and you talk about genie in a bottle, right? So you're talking about him and Dre just creating magic.
Mm-hmm.
That you know, he would have been Mobb Deep. He would have been Wu. You know, Pun, we had a pop record on, was still not a player, but you know, he would have been just in that lane. That was the only thing we knew how to do.
Wow. So I know that. You know, what I think is also interesting about your story is the fact that how the lineage goes down from your grandfather, your father, to you. And now your son is an MC, correct?
So my youngest, both my sons played ball.
Okay.
You know, one played college. Another one played for a famous high school out in L.A. And he didn't want to go to college. And out of nowhere, he just started rapping. And he put out a record and shit. Put the record out himself. He did, you know, a few hundred thousand streams. Flex played the record on his own.
Hmm.
Without like knowing the connection?
No, knowing the connection.
Okay.
But it was during the holidays. So he had a 2-week run. And he was going to music school in Florida, Full Sail. And it was just, you know, my son, he doesn't want to read it. He needs to see it and feel it. So he lost his love from doing like real schoolwork. That's not him. So, you know, he has 12 of his friends or like his crew, they're all in the NBA. So he's going to be an intern for Rich Paul starting in December.
Dope.
The way you're talking about basketball, I feel like your true passion is owning a team or.
Nah, I've lost so much money in basketball. I mean, I'm just a fan now. That's all I'm going to be. I've lost tens of millions of dollars.
But did you try to?
No, I never try to own a team. But like my philosophy in life, and this is what I learned from my dad. If I can help one person and save their life and put them in the right direction, then I did my job on earth. No money could, you know, that feeling of saving somebody, you can't put a price on that. And, you know, so when me and my wife split, mm-hmm. my kids are interracial.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they all came out different complexion, all three of them. Mm. You know, and one came out really light skinned like Jack the Rapper. Mm. And so when we split, she moved to Florida. And there's an area called Delray Beach. And in this one area in Delray Beach, it's probably the most gang affected in all of Florida in a 5-block radius. And there was a gym there. And she threw him in there and she goes, you got to learn how to stand on your own. and she wouldn't let me go to any games. And then finally, like, I didn't know what AAU was or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know where, I think she was coming out to LA. I don't know where she was going, but she goes, oh, you got to pick up Alex at 2 o'clock. He has a game at 12. I get there at 1 to watch the game. And I knew he was gifted. And then, but I didn't know that he had two other games that night, you know, 1 at 6 and 1 at 9. Mm. I was in heaven. And I just started going to the games, and, you know, they respected him for who he was. And I just minded my own business. I wasn't going to try and buy a team. But I didn't know that he was 11 and he was playing on a 14-under team and they didn't win a game. Oh. And but now, and he wasn't talking to me with me and his mom separating, mm-hmm. but now he was back in my life. And I said to the coach, I said, the season can't be over. And he says, well, you know, it's over. I'm like, you got to find something. I go, he goes, well, there's a tournament next week for a 12 and under team. I said, well, Alex is 11. How old is he? And like, we end up putting 6 guys on the team. He goes, who will coach? I said, I will. He says, what do you know about basketball? I said, enough. I shit you not. I go 70-0 that whole fucking summer.
7-0?
7-0. So Florida's known for football. I know nothing about football. Half my team are professional poker players right now. So they were just the best athletes in the world. And I just had them press, and they could all shoot the shit out of the ball and jump. And they were – how old was Alex? He was 11 or 12 at that time, right?
Yeah.
And I really thought I was going to become a professional basketball coach. Like, I had them traveling. We won states. We won nationals. We won the world games. And I just started taking on challenges. And then I get a phone call to buy a tournament, which was like a record convention. And mm-hmm. it just, like, one thing led to another, and I lost my shirt. But at the end of the day, that is my happiness. Music, right? Music is the closest thing to God, right?
Right.
Make you laugh, it can make you cry, just your memories. It just, it touches your soul pure. And basketball just, it just touches me too, where I get fucking crazy.
Do you still get an itching for, like, just one more hit? Metaphorically speaking, as in drugs, not like a hit single, but just is, I mean, are you addicted at all to the adrenaline?
Yeah.
I'm finding that rare gem.
So that... I got this kid right now. His name is Take 45.
Okay.
From San Diego, California.
Mm-hmm.
18 years old, self-contained, produces himself. He had 8 monthly users on Spotify. And now he's closing in on, I want to say, a little under 200,000. He had 20 followers on TikTok, and we're closing in on 300,000 followers. And all this kid is just keep on putting out music, and his energy is fucking ridiculous. And people will say to me, it's, you know, it's nothing what people are used to be putting out. But you know what? One of my old A&R guys on the West Coast brought it to me. And it's different. He's self-contained. And each day we're going up slowly, and he's going to break. I just don't know when. I don't know how to read records there, but the adrenaline that I get every day, just seeing it, if we're up 10 streams or 1,000 streams or getting on a new playlist. I was sick for a while. I had a massive heart attack 8 years ago.
Well, that's why you lost the weight.
No, I just lost weight because I didn't want to get another heart attack.
That's what I meant. That's what I meant. Yeah.
So, I was dead 3 times.
Oh, man.
What was that experience like? Was it just overworking? Was it stress?
It was never going to the doctor and not taking care of myself. If I went to a doctor and said, hey, your blood pressure is high, you got to do something. You got to lose 10 pounds. You got to do this. You got to do that. But it was... I'm not blaming my ex-wife. I'm not blaming anybody. It was just me not taking care of myself. You could say stress. You could say this. You could say that. But it was just, you got to know your body and you got to just take care of yourself. You know,
you got to make yourself a priority, not somebody else.
Yeah. You know,
we all learned that in the pandemic. Thank God.
You can't be a victim. And I would, you know, and just like, who wants to hear a victim story?
No, at least not of your own self. Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you don't feel like a stranger in the strange land in terms of, like,
Yeah, I do. I have no idea what the fuck.
Okay, like, good.
I mean, I have no fucking clue. I called the Empire Distributors. Gazi, to me, is the smartest guy in the music business. I don't want to bother him. So I speak to his, like, what can I do today? Like, I used to make a call sheet. Right. 200 fucking people. It'd be some mix show guys, my street team guys. This and that.
Right.
Right. I got five guys. Right. And they all work with me who are all at the DSPs. I mean, I sit here like just twiddling my fucking thumbs and I'll take a nap at 3 o'clock.
Sounds like a good day.
But I'm just saying that today, like, how is it different now promoting, especially with the internet at the helm?
You,
like,
have
you
nobody,
were the internet in the early 90s.
But you have nobody promote to. Like, you can't promote Spotify. The record, they don't want the record on the radio yet. So my day was today, I got him a booking agent at UTA, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was really excited to do your thing. So I went to lunch, made a few calls, and just thinking about the podcast all day.
Sound like freedom to me.
That's a dope day.
That's amazing.
Seriously. I'm like,
wait a minute. I'm going to get crushed if I don't ask one Asher Roth question.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Could you talk about your work with Asher Roth and like,
I mean, it was Scooter. I mean, as great as Asher was, I know he's from Pennsylvania, you know.
Right.
The guy by the name of Jerry Clark introduced me to Scooter. I was in Atlanta. And Scooter, I think, was still in college.
Mm-hmm.
And he just reminded me a little of myself. I thought he was a little bit more full of shit, but I thought he was brilliant. And I offered him to become president of a company with no experience.
Huh?
Scooter a start?
I gave Scooter his first record deal.
Shit. Now I feel like there's a question that I should be asking that I don't know to ask because, again, you keep on pulling these historical...
I gave Scooter, so this is what I'm proud of. I gave Scooter his first record deal with Asher Roth.
Right.
Okay. I gave Guy Osiri, I got him his first deal with Henji and Eva Lee with Ruben Rodriguez at Pendulum Records.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
So you just didn't start at Maverick?
Guy was 18 years old.
You gave, oh shit, okay.
No, I didn't sign him. I made the deal for Guy.
So Guy was managing Henji.
Yeah, and Eva Lee.
At the age of 18?
Yeah, you imagine, I think, at the age of 60. And I begged him to go, let's start an independent record company. And he fucking said no.
Wow. Okay. All right. Guy's my guy at Maverick. So
give us another one. I want one more. Yeah, it's at least a three.
Yeah, like, give me some more. Start bragging. Brag on yourself. This is my Nori moment.
I mean, I can't brag on myself. But, you know, Scooter, I offered him to become president of SRC. He said no. I said to the guy, let's start a record company. He said no. And I made the deal. And then, and that's, you know, and then RZA, me, you know, me, RZA, and Fat Joe, you know, those are,
I got
know,
it.
I took them.
Can I ask you an awkward question that probably nobody ever asked? Was it ever awkward to have that many 5%ers on a label?
Thank you. Good night.
honestly,
we should have asked that to Dante also.
I mean, the black man is God and the white man is devil.
They were all at my wedding. I mean, I never thought about it to just now. Like, it never came to my, you know.
I also asked that to know. I wanted to know at some point where do they stop? Because I feel like also at a certain point, you're helping to make money too. So
no,
it's
you don't
like,
fuck
okay,
with
I'm
going
to just,
you don't
I'm going to shut the fuck up.
With the bag.
But that's interesting.
Yeah. That's you never fuck with the bag.
Right.
It's no, like the only one that we had issues with was Dead Prez.
Oh, but, yeah.
I forgot about Dead Prez.
But at the end of the day, I probably handled it wrong. It was my ego was hurt. It was like, how the fuck can they not trust me?
Are you serious?
Yeah, I mean, I mean,
were there for the first record? Were you there for the second album?
No,
I can tell. Okay.
Oh.
I wish that second album should have blown up and it didn't.
Mm. But you know, but then you look at, you know, MOP, Annie Up, you know, it was just like those are records to this day, you know, that still give me goosebumps.
Yeah.
Stay around forever. No, I mean, this is the first time I think you and I are talking, man, but I've heard nothing but just stand up things about you and you know, all the respect that you had, and this is like a long overdue conversation, man. I thank you for coming on the show.
Are you in New York or are you in LA?
I'm currently in New York.
All right, so next time I'm in, we got to go to dinner.
No doubt. We'll go exchange numbers after the taping.
Yeah. That's right. You got a daughter too.
Yeah.
All right. Where do you guys want to go for dinner? I'll set it up and I'll.
Wait, Sugar, Bill, nothing? No questions?
Well, I mean, Steve, it sounds like you made a lot of close friends and a lot of people hate you, which makes you an authentic Steve. So congratulations on that. But what a great career. I mean, no, mm-hmm. just too much to process. Incredible.
Yeah. I really wish I was there at Radio City for that night at the celebration.
That night was so fucking special. I think it was X's last performance.
It was
it was right before everything shut down.
Yep. It was amazing. I was in LA.
Radio City would never be the same after that. They never saw so many people backstage in their life.
Good.
Yeah. I also wanted to know how that was organized and whatnot.
Okay.
Well, on behalf of Sugar Steve and Bill and Fontigolo and Laia, the great Steve Rifkin.
Yes. Thank you for the music.
Westlove Supreme.
Thanks for the music, man.
This was amazing. I hope I didn't talk too much.
No, we live for rabbit holing. Trust
me. What is that? What are those words that go together? Talk too much. We don't know.
So until next time, ladies and gentlemen, and I promise you that I will have better camera working. Yeah.
They used to.
At least Bill and Steve look professional. I feel like a drunk here. But anyway, thank you for doing our show.
Well, yeah, you're not a drunk, but you're getting high too much.
All right, we'll see you on the next go round. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. This is Questlove Supreme.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating.
I got a big heart, and I'm very forgiving, but like, don't abuse it. It's been abused enough.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution, because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and in the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.